because it's the first time. So good. Okay then, guys. So please. So okay. I'll kind of start off by just kind of saying thank you very much for everyone for joining us. We'll start off with Alexandra, kind of just getting to know everybody, so we get to know everyone who's on the course. It's really fantastic for us to kind of be having a very interactive sessions, and it will be really interesting to be doing that together. In terms of mics and video, you're welcome to keep your mics on, you know, especially for the discussion sessions, and video is optional as well. So whatever you prefer for this. So it's totally up to you. You could type, or you could have mic and video on. So again, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. It's really exciting to be doing this first session with you of the 10 lessons. And so without further ado, I will present Alexandra to you. And also, when Alexandra presents, she can... well, actually, before we begin, I think that a few of you met Karina, but let me just say a few words about Karina. So sorry, Karina, for me to ask you to repeat again.
That's fine.
I think not everybody got to say hi to Karina. So can you introduce yourself kindly, Karina? Karina is a fantastic PhD researcher working with us, and she'll actually be one of the excellent teachers that are going to be teaching on this course. So she's joining today in order to meet everyone and just see everybody on the course. But she's very excited to be teaching as well. So can you just say a few words, Karina?
Yeah, sure. So hi, everyone. Yeah, I'm a PhD researcher at the moment. So I'm in my third year. And my topic is neuroscience, and I look at the role of like how Alzheimer's disease develops. And yeah, I have quite a lot of experience teaching undergraduate students and demonstrating different lab tutorials and looking at essays as well. So hopefully my expertise will help you in your writing experience.
Cool. Perfect, Karina. That's really, really fantastic. Brilliant. So now, finally, Alexandra can begin. So this way I hand it over to Alexandra. And yeah, brilliant.
Okay. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the course. So today is the very first session, and yeah, apologies for all the technical difficulties. I have a lot of technical difficulties with Zoom in like my other work as well, but it's good that everyone is here and ready to get started. So yeah, just in terms of housekeeping, as Victor said, you are free to use the chat or use your mic and your camera. This session will be more interactive than the other sessions we did. So some of you have been to the free academic skills session or the live essay marking, and it was like more of a lecture style. This would be more like a seminar style presentation. You have plenty of opportunity to speak about your own ideas and to comment on the content and have questions and answers throughout the presentation, not only at the end of it, but of course we'll have some questions at the end. So because we started about half an hour later, I think, you know, I'll aim to finish, of course, before four. So it's an hour and a half. And I will leave some time at the end for questions as well. So if you had to, you know, go like 5 minutes early, but also if you have questions, you can put in the chat. So yeah, please do let me know if anyone needs to leave early, make sure you ask your questions throughout the presentation and don't leave them until the very end, but I will finish at four so you can get the 1 hour and a half that you actually came here for. So I will share my screen. I'm just sharing my screen now for the slides. Okay. If you can't see the slides, please do say that on the chat. So I will try, so Victor will try to sort out that, but I hope everyone can see it.
I think we could see it. Should be fine.
Right. Yeah. There's one person on the chat. Charlie, I see the slides now. Great. So everyone can see the slides. Okay. So today, the first topic before we go into the 10 weeks course, and each week we'll have a specific topic. So the idea of the course is every week we look at a particular topic a particular step for you to get your distinction in your essay or dissertation. And we look at that topic in detail with examples, with contributions from all of you, and also with some live essay marking in each session. And we'll look at different essays in those 10 weeks from different disciplines and levels. And the idea is that today is just the kind of starting off by thinking in more detail about the theory behind marking criteria, what do markers actually look for, and we'll do different types of exercise. So we'll look at what you thought about the home exercise, the two essays that you read at home, and how did you mark them, and then we'll look at the actual marks those essays got, and then we'll also have some live marking with a different essay at the end that everyone could see. Okay, so this is just a bit of a structure so everyone knows what to expect in the seminar. So every seminar we have a key learning outcome, and the learning outcome in this seminar is to understand the marking criteria in more detail, and most crucially to understand what core skills exist in those marking criteria, what are markers after when they mark your essay, and how they are assessed in practice. And we'll look at different types of marking throughout the different exercises, because it really, as I said, it really depends on what kind of work you're doing, but regardless of whether you're doing your third year essay or your master's dissertation or another type of coursework, you can still apply the same core academic skills. So this session should be applicable for everyone. But then depending on what each of you do, and in a second we'll have an exercise where everyone will get to speak about their or use the chat or speak for about their own work. And in this way, I can make sure that although this first session is a bit more general, the next sessions from week 2 up until week 10, I can actually select examples, and the other teachers on the course too, we can actually select examples that will be relevant to your particular level and your particular discipline as well. In a way, it's good to have a very mixed class because we can learn a lot from different disciplines, and we can learn a lot from each other's skills. The purpose of this seminar is also for me to understand more about your own background and the challenges that you currently face in your writing. So then I could adapt a lot more and personalize a lot more the exercises from the next session onwards. So we'll start, as I mentioned, we'll start with introducing the essay or dissertation or the piece of writing that you're currently working on. So we'll get to that in a minute. Then we'll discuss the home exercise, how did you grade the sample essays that you read at home and why, and we'll have a discussion around that. And then there will be a bit of a lecture part, maybe 15, 20 minutes of just the theory behind the marking criteria and categorizing the different skills used in the marking criteria and what you have to pay attention to when you write your essay or dissertation. Then we'll come back to the home exercise and have a bit of a reflective exercise, thinking after you learned all this theory about the marking criteria, whether you changed your mind or not about how you marked the essay, or whether you have any comments. And then we'll end with a live marking session where I will show how to apply the different criteria you learned and how a different type of assessment compared to the essays you read at home, how that is marked as well, and how some markers use additional criteria on top of the essential criteria that we'll discuss today. So it'll be like a bit of more different exercise. Okay, so before we start going into the class exercise discussion, obviously, I would love to know more about yourselves, about your work, so I could adapt the course content in a way that suits you and actually helps you with your current writing and perhaps future writing as well, if you have several assessment deadlines lined up, as most of us do. And a very useful exercise that helped me a lot, especially as a PhD student, but also when I was in my master's at Cambridge and my undergrad, was having being able to do this elevator pitch. So I'm not sure if everyone heard about this. It's, you know, very common in business to have an elevator pitch. And, you know, PhD students also always kind of chat about being asked, so what are you currently working on? And usually it's very complex to explain because, you know, you do a lot of research, even for a master's dissertation, you do, you know, perhaps you do original research, you do surveys, interviews, you write a lot, you read hundreds of different articles, sometimes for a PhD. And it's very, very difficult to actually summarize, you know, in very simple words, like you do to your friends, to summarize what you're working on and why that is important. So that's what I thought to do today, because it's a good exercise to be able to summarize. In a way, it helps you build your argument, because if you can summarize what you're working on in 30 seconds or a minute, then it actually means that you do have a clear argument. And, you know, no worries if you don't have, you know, an argument yet decided on. You can just use this exercise to try to actually think what you're working on and what's the key message from on your dissertation or essay. So the exercise goes like this. That's, you know, I learned this through a business course, like, you know, years ago, but it does apply a lot to academia. So you imagine that you're in an elevator, and, you know, usually it's a business person, but in this case it's an academic. And, you know, the academic that you try to impress, whether it's your tutor or your lecturer, is there, happens to be in the same elevator as you. And usually if you think about, I don't know, 10th floor, maybe it takes about 30 seconds, even less, with, you know, very high-tech elevators. So you have about 30 seconds to actually grab their attention, to impress them so they can remember what you're working on. So usually what could you fit in about 30 seconds? So, you know, you can say your name, the degree you're studying for, what type of assessment you're working on, what is it on? So that being your topic or your research question, if you already have, go to that stage or you have one. If not, you know, you can just speak about the topic you're interested to write about. And very crucially, why it is an important topic to be studied, why it is relevant for, you know, in academia. So I'm not sure how this will work in terms of the exercise remotely, but I suggest, maybe those of you who want to speak on camera and with voice, you can try this exercise, and, you know, Victor can make sure that you are unmuted and you have, yes, like, all the technology to do that. And, you know, whoever wants to do that can start and do that on camera and introduce themselves to everyone kind of following this pattern, or perhaps adding other things. And then whoever doesn't want to do that and wants to write on the chat, perhaps you can write on the chat meanwhile whilst the others are doing the voice part of it, and then I can read those other introductions myself if you prefer that way, or if your technology doesn't work right. But I would really like to have some of you at least, some of you speaking and introducing themselves, like we do usually in a seminar at the beginning of the year.
So we're definitely, that's fantastic. And I actually thought that it would be fun to have maybe Karina start off by doing this, and you guys could see how a experienced PhD researcher does it, and then you guys could do it as well. So do you want to start off, Karina? I've unmuted.
Sure. So my name is Karina, and I'm working. My degree is neuroscience, so I'm doing my PhD in neuroscience. I'm currently working through a set of experiments, and I'm trying to start working on my thesis soon. So the topic is Alzheimer's, as I said earlier. So I'm looking at early mechanisms involved in Alzheimer's, and I'm trying to see in what ways and how the cells are affected in early Alzheimer's. And obviously that's an important topic, considering that given the aging population currently, there's a lot of people, the case of Alzheimer's have been increasing more and more, and we don't understand what exactly the mechanisms are. So that's why my research, why the topic is important.
Cool, perfect.
Right,
that's like fantastic.
It's kind of spot on the 30 seconds mark.
Oh, wow. Right. That's amazing. That's perfect. Yeah, really fantastic. Thank you for that, Karina.
Exercises, and like used to have competitions, like who could actually have 30 seconds like on the spot.
Wow, that's so cool. Perfect. So who's next then? You guys can raise your hand and Well, Victor will pick someone. So in the list, the first person after Karina is Bin Chuan.
Charlie says on the chat he's happy to.
Great, Charlie. Fantastic. So, okay, Charlie. So let's have you. I've unmuted you, Charlie. You're welcome to hey, Charlie. Yeah. Hey.
Just 30 seconds, right?
Yes. Yeah,
I'm timing. Like, so who has like 30 seconds gets like some extra class exercise.
Yeah. Okay. So let me know when I can start.
Please just start now.
Yeah. So my name is Charlie and I'm doing BSc Anthropology and I'm currently in my third year. I'm doing my dissertation. My dissertation topic is about anthropology of education. So basically how school rules, aside from curricular studies, affect teenagers' development. And why do I think it's important is because it's barely been like systematically studied, and it's very complicated, have many complicated implications in like real school life. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Oh, that's great, thank you. Like really interesting topic. 41 seconds, but it's very good for like the first time, you know, trying this. Like this was like 3.5 minutes. Yeah. So well done.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Who wants to be next? Or hey,
in
the chat as well.
Yeah, I just realized Damilade wasn't here before. So, hey, Damilade. So sorry, I think that we restarted the chat and then we lost you. But don't worry, you didn't miss much. We were just doing introductions. Can you hear us, Damilade?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, that's perfect. That's fantastic. I'm glad that we found you now again. So sorry about kind of not finding you after we left the chat. But okay, that's perfect. So just to kind of catch you up, we basically, Alexandra just did a little kind of introduction. So now we're doing like a little elevator pitch, which basically means that we're all introducing ourselves and our research. So far, Karina has introduced herself, who you spoke to in the other chat just a second ago, and Charlie as well. And so the idea then is we do a kind of 30-second presentation of the information that is on the screen. So name what you're writing, what is it on, and why it's important to be studied. Okay?
All right.
Great. So maybe somebody else can go and then Damilade can go after so that he sees what it's like. Oh, great. Okay, so Sarah has one, and I'll read it out then. So my name is Sarah, and I do my MA dissertation in applied linguistics about analyzing conversations between tutors and learners in English language online. The importance is I'm trying to understand how learning process occurs during interaction. Okay, cool. That's very nice and concise. Brilliant.
That's definitely less than 30 seconds. That's great.
yeah, definitely. Good. So on my list, as I was saying, Bin Chuan is on the list as well. So Bin Chuan, do you want to do your 30-second pitch at all? If you can hear us, Bin Chuan. Oh, Bin Chuan, good, perfect. Okay, so I'm going to read this one out loud. So hi, I am Bin Chuan from MA Education. I am currently writing an essay about literacy. It is about becoming literate involves mastery and integration of a number of complex processes and is influenced by factors external to the learner. The importance is that we could, and Bin Chuan is writing the rest of it, so writing the importance factor. And that's interesting to see that we have two MA and applied linguistics and education, and then Charlie does something that touches on education anthropology. So it's interesting to see the field of research that everybody is in. Okay, good. So its importance is that we could analyze social factors, identity, and we could influence people's literacy ability. Good. Fantastic. Is that all good, Alexandra?
Yeah, it's just like I want to do this like short exercise because it's, you know, it's very useful for everyone if I could actually adapt examples, because if I knew, you know, a few people work on education, or for a few people work on linguistics, maybe someone works on something else, then the essay examples that you'll get from next week throughout the 10-week course will actually be relevant and interesting for your topic. So that's the kind of, yeah, justification behind it.
Exactly. Exactly.
We have another one from Gloria.
Perfect. Do you want to read that one out, Alexandra?
Yeah. So, hi, Gloria. So Gloria says she's studying MA Education Management. So we have quite a few people studying education.
Yeah, I've noticed. Okay.
I have not decided my topic yet, but the thesis will focus on the issue of students, 14 and 15-year-old students, health and well-being in the schools based on the 2015 PISA results. It will further emphasize the inspiration and implications for China. Yeah, so a lot of people doing different education topics, and I hope this course, for Gloria or anyone else who hasn't decided yet on the particular research question, will have one of the seminars on structure and building your argument. So that will definitely help you get there and decide a good research question.
Definitely. Excellent. So, Damilade, did you want to go next? Since great.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes. Excellent.
Okay. My name is Damilade Fanira. I'm from Nigeria. I'm studying for a degree, master's in clinical oncology, at the University of Birmingham, and. My dissertation is focused on nasopharyngeal carcinoma in sub-Saharan Africa. The presentation, the pathology, and the viral association. So, because there are some kinds of cancers that are caused by viruses, so I'm trying to look at the Epstein-Barr virus, most probably as a causative agent for nasopharyngeal carcinoma in sub-Saharan Africa. A lot of studies have been done in Asia, but I'm focusing on the sub-Saharan Africa. That's the importance of the study. I think that's it, right?
Yeah. Is that good, Alexandra?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, it's good to have also a mix of like more like theoretical and research students as well, to kind of speak to different examples. And yes, we'll have one of the sessions on originality and critical thinking, but definitely having, you know, applying something that has been studied, for example, in the UK or the States, to another context, another country in which perhaps those studies haven't been conducted before in the same way or in the same context, is definitely something that could tick some of the originality boxes in your dissertation. So
perfect.
It'll be week 8 that will focus on that specifically. Yeah, so it's good to know the different topics everyone is working on, so then I can select some examples that are relevant to you.
Excellent, Damilade, thank you.
Yep. I think
we haven't done Yunsu.
Okay. Oh yeah, yeah.
I think Yunsu is last. Yunsu, do you want to speak or do you want to type?
I'm gonna speak.
Great. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm Yunsu from South Korea. I'm studying development studies at LSE, and now I'm working on so many things: one essay, dissertation, and report. But all these things are focusing on development studies. So I just like to briefly mention about my dissertation topic. My dissertation is gonna be about politics and industrialization. So in development studies, political aspects could be overlooked, but I believe politics and governance are crucial elements in development. So I do like to address this issue comparing the two case studies, Rwanda and Burundi.
Okay, that's great. Thank you, Yunsu.
Thank you.
Great. Amazing.
It's good to have like a different mix of students who do research like in the UK and students who do research like outside the UK as well. So especially, I mean, like in my school at UCL, a lot of people do research in Eastern Europe because it's the School of East European Studies, whereas I did my research in the UK. And it's always so interesting to have those conversations about how we can apply the same theories in different contexts across the world. So I did take a note of all your different degrees and topics. Yeah, I think Yeonsu is actually the winner in terms of the 30 seconds. I think it was 32 seconds.
So you mean the closest time for finishing?
Yes, exactly. The closest time for the elevator pitch. Okay, thank you, everyone. It's great. And this will really, really help me adapt some of the course material. So it's like, because no one is studying maths, for example, here, it's no point really using an example from a maths coursework where I can use a lot of examples from education, from clinical sciences, and from anthropology and education and development studies. So I will try to make it more relatable to what you are working on.
Very exciting talks from everyone. I just want to say super fascinating research as well. So really happy to have discussions with everybody during this course about how their research area applies as well. Good.
Okay, so now that we all introduced ourselves, let's move on to the first part of the content today, which is to discuss a bit about the home exercise. So I did put in the chat two PDF files. So this is the home exercise I sent to everyone via email with the instructions, just saying that, please read those two essays and try not to spend a lot of time on them. Try to spend 20, 30 minutes, because that's usually how long a marker has to mark an essay or a dissertation. Try to think about, what do I like about this essay? What could I improve in this essay? And what mark would I give this essay from 0 to 100? So I'm not sure how many of you did this. So it'd be good if some of the students who did do this class exercise would start off. And then, if you didn't manage to get through all the reading, because I know it was quite a long, there were quite long essays, then you can just have the document open. And in this way, you could also follow what others are saying. So let's just have a bit of a discussion before we move on to the theory. And then at the end of the theory part, I will tell you what the markers actually gave to those essays. How did they mark the essays at the university they submitted those essays for? We had the first essay was, essay number one was, they were both in anthropology, so, hence comparable in a sense. So you can also think about which essay did persuade you more in terms of the argument, or which essay was better structured, and it's often useful to compare essays from the same discipline, but they had very different topics. So one of them spoke about violence in the context of evolution, but then the other one spoke about music in the context of human evolution. So two different topics within the same kind of theme. So does anyone want to start? I mean, either on the chat, we can start with, you could comment on what your thoughts were in the class, in the home exercise, and then give like the verdict of like, essay one is like what mark, and then essay two, what mark did you think was appropriate? Or you can just comment in the chat of, what mark did you give? But I would like some comments of, did you spot anything that could have been improved? Did you look at an essay and thought this wasn't particularly clear, or this didn't have enough referencing, or like any kind of thought? And there are no right or wrong answers at this stage. So the point is that we have the discussion and then we go into the theory and then we'll come back to it and see if you changed your mind. So yeah, we can use the chat, but we can also use voice for those who want it. Any thoughts on this, and what marks did you give to essay one and essay two?
Did everybody had a chance to read them, or maybe not for everyone because a bit busy? If you read it, guys, feel free to say yes in the chat. I read them.
Charlie read them. So Charlie, would you like to start to just, just have some thoughts about what did you think about, one of them or both of them, and what mark would you give them?
Oh, sorry, Charlie.
So just give me a second. Let me rethink, because I read them yesterday. So let me, and they are quite academic. So let me just
Yeah, sure thing. Take your time, Charlie. Anybody else had a chance to look at them? So the idea really was to kind of figure out, you know, how you think these essays were really and what grade you'd give it. So, yeah. So, Binchuan, did you have a chance to read it? Oh, yeah, I read them. Can I start? Yes, Yunsu, please start. Do you want to speak or type? Feel free to just unmute yourself if you want to type. I mean, speak.
Great. For me, I didn't do my undergraduate in the UK, so I'm not 100% sure about the marking system. But I personally, I quite like the essay one and two, both of them. But for me, essay one is much better than essay two, because essay one shows a lot of good reading literature and also showing highly engaged, like high engagement with readings. So I think essay one could get 70. I'm not sure. The second one was also good, but compared to the first one, I feel like it's more about, it's more general than academic. So, but it's still good because it used a lot of enough literature for the essay. So I think it could get 60 or like 63. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Thank you. So, yeah, I mean, like you did some observations about the level of reading and the engagement with reading. So that's something that we'll discuss a lot in the course of, you know, what's the difference between, yeah, a 60 or a 70 in terms of the engagement with reading and how, you know, how many references do you have? Is there like a correct number of references per paragraph and all those different questions? Yeah, the other interesting thing is about the structure. So like, you know, one essay perhaps being a bit clearer or flowing a bit nicer than the other one. So yeah, I won't reveal the grades yet because I want to allow other people to express their thoughts on this. But it's also interesting that you said that you felt the first one is better than the second one. And that's how I would expect a lot of people to feel. And this is why the structure, having a clearer structure and better paragraphing actually helps. That's also the impression the marker would get initially. So the first impression of the marker will be very important. Anyone else? So there's Sarah on the chat saying the structure of the music essay is not easy to follow because the paragraphs were long. I could not read it. I would give it a 52 plus. Yeah, that's a very good point about how long the paragraph should be. If you look at the second essay, there's a paragraph that's quite obviously over a page long. Yeah, don't do that. Don't have a paragraph over a page long. And this often happens not because students don't know or weren't told that they should have shorter and clearer paragraphs. It's often because lack of time to proofread or lack of time to think about the argument. And that's why it's great you guys have this, you know, this course and like starting to think early about all those aspects, because the earlier you plan, the more you can avoid ending up with paragraphs that are one page long and not have time to proofread or structure your argument in a way that flows nicer. Okay, anyone
else? Yeah, Alexandra, I think both of the essays have a bit of problems with referencing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know how to like kind of, but like, I think for example, essay two is a bit hard for us to follow the structure, might be due to the like that bit like disordered referencing, because then like it's I could barely see what the author was trying to like, what's his own stuff, what's the referencing, like if you know what I mean, like because of the disorder the referencing, it makes audience harder to follow the like the structure.
So what how would you grade the essays then?
Yeah, I would say the first one is higher than the second one. That's what I and I'll say first one maybe 60, second one maybe 50 to 55.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I
think. Yeah, it's a very good point about the references. So it's about, you know, the marker will also see it in the same way. It's about, is it easy to follow if you just have, you know, an enumeration of references or just, you know, summarizing one line, one reference. And the marker starts questioning, is there a link, a logical link amongst those references? Is there a theme? So especially if you have something like a master's dissertation and you have a literature review component, and often in undergraduate dissertations as well, you'll be required to have a literature review. It's really important to think about the structure. How do I structure it by theme? Does it make more sense to structure it in a more chronological way or not? Perhaps more relevant for some history degrees than other degrees. My personal literature reviews are always thematic, but that's why it's really important to read the marking criteria and to be aware of the requirements of each piece of work, because then you won't you won't confuse the marker in the way with the referencing. Is anyone else? Anyone else wants to? No problem. If not, we had like a very good ideas and examples from a few people so far, and we'll come back to this. So, if no one else wants to speak, does anyone else want to speak on this exercise? Okay, so I take that no worries about that. We'll come back to this after the theory part and. You can still comment on the chat, so if you have any other ideas. So in about 20 minutes or so after we get through the theory part of this seminar, we can come back to the discussion. So if you want to write in the chat, say essay one is a, you know, this is great and so on, we can come back and I can read the comments later on. Okay, so yeah, so this is the marking criteria again that you used for the class exercise, and we'll come back to it later if anyone wants to comment. But now I just thought to give a little bit of the theory behind the markers decisions and the theory behind, you know, universities coming up with all this marking criteria. So just the first slide is just very, very basic things you should do to be able to understand the marking criteria and be able to apply them in your own work. So there's just like, you know, very few steps, very few basic things you should do before we start actually looking at those core academic skills that appear in all marking criteria, regardless of your level and your discipline. So the very first thing to do is really to familiarize yourself with what is expected of you in your degree level. And if you look at any university website, such as the UCL website I went on to take the marking criteria for the essays you read at home, there are different criteria by level. So the essays you read at home, there were second year undergraduate essays, and there is this nice two-part table for second year, and there's a different one for first year, a different one for third year, and so on. So just be aware. And there's some general criteria for the degree itself. That's the first thing, is to look at this general marking criteria. Then after you do that, it's about knowing what your specific assignment requires. And that's where your course handbook or the online version of it, in most cases, will have specific marking criteria. And today we'll look at, in the live marking a bit, we'll look at an essay that had a technical component, a technical skills component. So often in some, you know, in the hard sciences, but often like in psychology or like, you know, clinical studies or other disciplines, you're also assessed on additional skills. So we're thinking about marking criteria as essential skills. And that's what we'll cover today, the essential skills that apply no matter what you're studying, and then additional skills. So I'll look through an example of additional skills in the live marking exercise. Then it's about, you know, the one, you know, advice I will have for you is like to follow your tutors or your lecturers' instructions. Because, you know, often marking criteria are quite vague, and, you know, even, you know, me as a student, sometimes I got quite confused about what a specific term actually meant. So, you know, originality? Do I actually have to do any original research, or can I show originality otherwise? Of course, we'll cover like those kind of questions in the course, but if you have any kind of doubt, I really, really advise to ask your tutor. And I've been a tutor, like I've had office hours for a number of years, and I can actually tell from experience the students who came to my office hours, and I could look at their essay plan or the dissertation plan and advise in more detail, got better marks in the end. I mean, you can see a correlation. I'm not sure if there's any study on that or just my experience by myself. I could see that in my own students at UCL. And finally, to remember, just in terms of the very basics, is that you know, markers really enjoy reading good essays, and we'll see, you know, throughout the course some examples of good essays, some examples of not so good essays, and you actually see in your home exercises that you actually enjoy very much reading the very good essays, and that's how the markers think about it as well. So it is also, in terms of timing, the time of the marker, it's often easier to mark something that's an essay that's a first than to decide whether an essay gets a 48 or a 52 or a 58 and a 62, for example. So it's, yeah, do help the marker give you the high grades, because it actually makes their job easier as well if you submit good work. So that are just kind of the very, very basics on the essay marking. Now we'll go into the detail and the theory of the core academic skills that apply regardless of your level or your discipline. So I find those skills in all marking criteria that I ever looked at. Sometimes they have different names, usually different synonyms to describe them, but they're always there and assessed in UK universities. So knowledge and understanding. So, like, you know, tutors, lecturers always say you need to demonstrate good knowledge and understanding, or excellent knowledge and understanding if you want high grades. So reading is really, you know, reading enough and quality sources is the foundation of your knowledge and understanding on the topic that you write about. So there's no doubt about, you know, how much reading contributes to that. And to get high grades, lecture notes, seminar notes and textbooks, unfortunately, are not enough to score a first or a distinction. Sometimes there are essays or dissertations that use quite few references compared to the average number of references submitted in dissertations, but it's really when they engage like in very much detail with a particular theory. Like if you use a particular theory, let's say a sociological theory, and you just apply that to your own original research and you go into a lot of detail and critique of, you know, a particular theory, then perhaps there are, you can see some essays that have fewer references. But it really depends, again, what you do. And as a general rule, that's definitely not enough. Crucially, and this is linked to what markers assess when they assess your level of knowledge and understanding, is that you need to evidence every part of your argument. So I could have an argument that has several parts of it. Maybe I'll have some hypothesis if I do original research. Maybe I have a research overarching research question with several sub-questions. So maybe I can say, I mean, for my own work is on immigration and in the UK. So I could say, have an overarching question saying, how are immigrants represented in the UK media? And I can have a sub-question saying, how are you know, EU migrants represented in newspapers? And then another question looking at how are non-EU migrants represented in perhaps other type of media. So anytime if you have an argument that has several sub-arguments, you need to evidence every part of your argument. And that's again where reading does help a lot. So to develop this this dimension of your skills in a lot of detail, seminar two, so the one next week, will focus on how effective note taking, and we'll go through different models of how to take notes to ensure that you write the information that is necessary, and also that you kind of put in your own critique of the readings that you do, that will enable you to tick the box on originality that would be discussed later on in the course. Then what is always assessed, regardless of, you know, whether you're first year, third year, or master student or PhD student, for that matter, is having a clear argument or clear arguments if you are going through multiple arguments. Usually a short dissertation, master's or undergraduate dissertation will have one clear argument at one overarching argument, and then you can kind of have sub arguments, but you know, just focus on defining one. This is always linked to what tutors and lecturers always say to you, is always answer the essay question or dissertation question, whether that is set out by your course or whether that is set out by you. And that's something that can seem quite, you know, quite trivial. You say, of course, if I select my research question, I will answer it. But it's surprisingly easy not to answer it, especially if you go on a tangent, or if you don't, perhaps you do answer it and you think that you answered it, but perhaps it's not written in a very clear way to make the tutor understand that actually you answered it. So we speak throughout, in seminar 4, we'll show different ways to build clear and persuasive arguments and how you can make sure that the tutor does follow your argument and can tick the box that you had a very clear argument. So an argument, what is it? It's your key message that you actually want to communicate to the reader. So therefore it needs to be visible at the beginning of the essay, but also throughout it. And the argument is also not only about having a clear message, but it's also about, you know, kind of incorporating your own perspective on the topic and question that you will be discussing. And then the third skill is about structure. So from year one till PhD, lecturers, professors will always speak about having a solid structure that's easy to follow. Well, a good structure, why is it important? Because the marker will actually understand what the purpose of each section of your writing is. So what I suggest to everyone is to think about structure, not only in terms of, do I have an introduction, a conclusion, and a body of the text, or do I have some subheadings? It's think about the structure within each of those subheadings, within each section, and also within each paragraph. Does my paragraph have a topic sentence? Does my paragraph have evidence? Does my paragraph expand enough on the idea that I want to communicate? And very crucially, and this is linked to the argument, is that the structure should reflect your argument. So if you have an argument saying, let's say you have a mixed argument kind of that encompasses both criticisms and advantages of a certain perspective, that needs to be reflected through your structure and how you structure your work. So in this sense, to help you develop this solid structure, seminar 3 will be taught by our expert PhD, Anastasia, and she will show you how to structure and plan your essay or dissertation, and with examples on your own topic to help you develop that further. Then probably the most difficult box to tick on the first or distinction mark is, how do you demonstrate originality? And I put critical thinking with, you know, alongside originality, because they are interlinked. So the higher you demonstrate your critical thinking, the more likely you'll be to have to tick on the originality box as well. So what is important here to focus on, rather than coming up with a very new theory or a completely new argument that no one studied, even if you may think that I thought at some point that I came up with this brilliant argument and no one did, and a couple of days later I just found this article that, you know, had exactly the argument I wanted to make. So it's very uncommon to have this, especially at the undergraduate level, but even at master's level, to have a very, very original idea that was not studied before. So it's all about, as you said at the beginning in your dissertations, is maybe applying something that was studied before but to another country or another context, or applying it in a different way. So that's how you build originality. Originality is also built through evidencing your reflection. That again is linked to critical thinking. So do treat the sources you use critically, and also treat what you write critically. So especially if you're doing you have a research component or an original research component to your dissertation, whether that is conducting interviews or using existing survey data or doing case studies with with people or having experiments, it's very important. Part of critical thinking is not only being critical of the literature you use, but it's also being critical of your own data sets and your own data collection. So are there any limitations? You know, it's fine to say, I have, like, in my PhD, I have about 3 pages or 4 of limitations at the end, in which I acknowledge. So, you know, what are the limitations of my data collection? What are the limitations of my arguments? If I had enough, if I had more time and resources for this PhD or for this dissertation, what would be the further areas of research? So it's quite common in dissertations too. It doesn't have to be 3 pages because I wrote a PhD that's 400 pages long. It has to be just, you know, a paragraph or a couple of small paragraphs thinking about being critical of your own analysis and your own work. So yeah, the key thing here is what I would say to students is be analytical, don't be merely descriptive. So in the live essay marking and in some of the examples, we'll see how a lot of students tend to read quite a lot and then they just enumerate and summarize source after source. And the marker is then left confused because it's a very descriptive paragraph. You think, has the student enumerated everything that they read, or have they actually thought about critically how does it link into different themes, or how does it link into different different lines of thought of in that literature? And in seminar two, again, this skill will be developed a lot in seminar two because we practice critical note taking, and then seminar eight will be more focused on the originality and kind of building that further. How does critical thinking convert to ticking the box on originality? Then citations and referencing, that's perhaps the easiest criteria to mark on as a marker, but it does have different components to it. So yes, the very basic is, of course, always acknowledge the sources of the information you use in your writing. And just to be consistent on style, to check your university or department's reference style preferences. And once you have that information, apply the one that is recommended correctly and consistently. And there are different bits of this marking criteria, so citations and referencing. So it's about the style. So one of the subparts of the criteria is how you use the referencing style. But also about how you actually integrated your references within the text, and that all those kind of core academic skills are interlinked. Once you get one to a very excellent level, you will get the other ones kind of following on, because if you have a high, if you demonstrate a high critical thinking in your dissertation, you are also more likely to be able to incorporate to integrate the references in a way that's not only like an enumeration. Then citations, always markers will look at the quotes that you use. And some students use, you know, very few quotes. Some essays are written without any direct quotes, and that can be fine as well. But a lot of students use very short quotes instead of paraphrasing. So always when you have written a paragraph and you have a couple of quotes from 2 readings, think about, can I put this in a better and clearer way in my own words, you know, based on my own understanding and interpretation of the reading? Of course, there are certain things that have to be direct quoted, like if someone coined a particular phrase in the literature, you know, if someone came up with a particular term for the first time, you do reference that term. If it's a very specific concept that was coined by an author for the first time and is recognized in the literature of being that kind of author's invention or term. In this sense, to help you with that and to help you with all those different tricks in a way to incorporate the references in a way to persuade the marker that you have engaged with the literature, seminar 6 will be taught by Kari, actually, and will demonstrate the secrets of good paraphrasing and consistent referencing. And I think this is the good paraphrasing is actually the key, because it's often the case that you don't have a lot of time to write your dissertation, then it's very easy to just direct code or just, you know, summarize abstracts or just do a very kind of more surface engagement with the literature. Whereas if you learn how to paraphrase in a way that does show your critical thinking of the sources that you paraphrase or the arguments you do, then that could much easier lead to a very good grade at the end. And then finally, so kind of I put this into six different categories just to help you think about what are the main core criteria that are present in all marking criteria. So the final one that I put here is writing style and presentation. Sometimes you have them separately, sometimes you have presentation and then style as two separate criteria. It also depends on the discipline, because sometimes when you have, let's say, I don't know, you write an essay, write a dissertation using some quantitative methods and you did some regression analysis, for example, and you have some figures, some tables, some kind of data presented in a visual form, you could have like a separate criteria on presentation of visual materials. Or if you do, I don't know, an anthropology essay and you perhaps use some pictures or something visual, you could have presentation as a separate criteria. And then the writing style, but usually they kind of go together in terms of what skills you actually need to be good at those. So my advice here would be to think about your marker as the audience for your argument. So if you were to present this essay in front of an informed audience, perhaps, I don't know, giving a talk on it, or maybe even speaking to a very informed media about your findings, what would be, you know, the key thing that you would say to them? And it will really help you structure your argument. So think about the audience. Would you want the audience to read something that's confusing or something that is they won't understand? Probably not. You wouldn't want to do that. You want the audience to have a very clear message that they could understand, and they importantly that they could relate to and see the logic of your analysis. So do you use clear English and ask yourself if the marker will actually be be able to understand what you wrote. And it's often very tempting to think that, you know, all those lecturers and professors and markers, you know, have the knowledge on everything and they read like, you know, every single source that you may use. But a lot of the people in academia, a lot of lecturers and tutors have their own area, own like specialty area. So for example, mine is in migration studies and sociology. So, and social like migration studies as part of sociology. So I would have, you know, thousands and thousands of readings that I know that are relevant to migration, but perhaps I wouldn't be so familiar with, I don't know, the political sociology, some of the readings in political sociology. So it's always about actually making the marker understand how you use those references and not let the marker question whether you used this knowledge correctly, because the likelihood is that the marker wouldn't, especially if you have some sources from a particular context, a different country. I read a lot of journals in Romanian, for example, my first language. I don't expect the marker to be able to know every single reference. So it's important that I demonstrate to the marker that I did use those in the correct way. And also markers would actually look at evidence that the work has been proofread and edited according to an academic style. The proofreading doesn't mean that you proofreading necessarily paying someone to proofread. It just, you know, the marker assesses whether you actually have read the essay before submitting it. And it's quite easy to know that, because when I see an essay, I could tell if it was submitted the minute before the deadline and the students couldn't have time to proofread, because I know there are a lot of mistakes in there that the student wouldn't have made otherwise if they had time to actually read their work on their own. So it doesn't necessarily mean to have like a friend or someone else reading it, although that's another option if you feel that could improve your work. It's about you actually having time to go at least a couple of times through the essay and edit what you think should be edited out or correcting any mistakes that you may see. So seminar 7 will develop this clear and economical writing style for you that will definitely boost your grades. Okay. So now just to help you make help you in your essay writing, because often those criteria, those marking criteria that I try to categorize in only six criteria, so it's easier for you to follow and think about the skills that you have to develop, but often they're still quite vague. I mean, it's quite difficult to say what exactly you'll be marked on, because that really depends on from discipline to discipline and from university and your level and so on. So I could say, you know, those are the six like key skills, but not necessarily, you know, the only ones, especially if you do a more technical topic. So that's why we will look at, in the live marking example, we will look at a technical marking criteria as well. But before that, I thought what would be actually useful for you, you know, so you have your essay in progress, planning, or you read, you did write parts of it already. So what really helped me as a student is to kind of have a checklist. So every time I wrote something, an essay or my dissertation, I had like a checklist of what are the things that I should check before I even consider submitting the dissertation or the essay. And for you today, I did think through all the questions that I asked and my students ask, and that I think are helpful for you. And I put this like very simple, like 4-step essay or dissertation checklist. And that's designed really to develop critical thinking on your own work. So something we discussed a bit earlier. So this checklist will be in the notes. So something that I don't think I mentioned so far. So after each seminar, so after today, you'll get some notes, some professional looking notes, and this will be included in that as well. Okay, so the first, so this kind of checklist is designed according to the core skills that we looked at. So starting with structure and argument. And those are some examples of questions that I always ask myself whenever I'm writing anything. I could write an academic article like I'm doing currently, or I could, you know, when I wrote my PhD, when I wrote my essays before. So is my argument clearly stated in the abstract and introduction and followed throughout the essay? That's, you know, probably the key thing, most important thing. Does my argument flow logically? And it's important when you ask those questions to actually be critical, not to be like, well, you know, it'll do. Like, you know, actually be critical, thinking, you know, maybe I missed out something. Maybe it's not logical in this particular bit. Does my essay answer the question, either my question or my tutor's question? Does my conclusion support my argument? That's quite difficult to do because often you have, and I was guilty of this in the past as well, I have quite a vague conclusion, maybe adding extra points in the conclusion and not necessarily, you know, the purpose of the conclusion is to actually support your argument and to show, to conclude how your argument has been supported by the evidence that you presented in the body of the text. Okay. Then the second step, so this is like the 4-step checklist of structure and arguments. Like once you've thought critically about those questions, think about the use of evidence. So is my argument supported with evidence? Does the evidence support my conclusions? Again, linking to this question with the argument as well. Did I use sufficient evidence? Does each paragraph contain evidence for the key point that it makes? So usually you have like a topic sentence that would be like kind of the key message of that paragraph. Then you have maybe like a couple of sentences developing on that key idea, and then you'll support with evidence either in the form of examples from the literature or in the forms or in the form of your own kind of research and analysis if you're doing original research. Okay, and do I reference the sources I use accurately when quoting or paraphrasing? So that will be like the last kind of point in the checklist. And this is like a checklist that I go through as a marker as well. So but maybe before I go to this, I will see like what's in the chat if anyone has any questions. And then we can progress with the little bit of theory that is left. Okay. Okay, so Charlie asks something about the conclusion, which is something that we discussed on this slide as well. Do I have to re-indicate all the arguments in the conclusion, or is that not necessary? Just being conclusive is enough. So what I usually do And I think it's, you know, good practice to do is to have, you know, a summary of your argument. So not kind of going into detail, but kind of you can think about, let's say I had a dissertation and I had 20 interviews and I analyzed the interview data and I had three key themes in my interviews. And then in the body of my dissertation, I go on and explain each key theme in the interviews with supporting evidence for my interviews. And then in the conclusion, I'll just go over the key ideas again. I'll just say, well, the interview analysis evidenced those three key themes, and then, you know, speak a bit about how it relates to the literature, perhaps, that you had in your literature review. So the idea of the conclusion is not to give detail on the same argument you made, is to kind of, it's more about summarizing your first sections, which is usually your literature review or the method, if you're doing a dissertation, the methodology section, and then your findings section, and kind of wrapping everything together and saying, well, I started from this point of the literature review. I identified this gap in the literature. I used this method for my dissertation to gather some knowledge that would fill in the gap in the literature. And then this is what my the evidence I gathered argued. This is my main argument. And this is how it relates back to the literature that I reviewed. So it's more about kind of that, yeah, wrapping up the argument rather than giving more detail. So yeah, there's some more ideas on the home exercise. So I'll go back to the home exercise in a couple of minutes, and then I will read the contributions there on the chat. So then the third step in this four-step checklist is about critical thinking. So think about what is new about what I am arguing. And new can mean a lot of things. Yeah, as I said before, it doesn't need to be like groundbreaking, inventing the new economic theory. But it has to be, what is new about what I am arguing? But perhaps it's, I'm arguing that perhaps the same conclusion or a different conclusion applies in another context. So I can say that what has been researched in the UK on, you know, I don't know, something like the impact of a certain policy also applies in Romania, where I conducted my study, for example. So a few of you do research in other countries. So it could be something like that is new. It's kind of shining some light on this particular context that wasn't studied before or was under-researched. And, you know, it deserves to be researched for these particular reasons that you justify. How do I demonstrate critical reading of the sources I use? So again, think about your paragraphs. Think about, you know, do I merely describe what I have read? Do I just enumerate my sources and then put the reference in the bracket? Or did I actually find perhaps a trend in the literature or a theme or a critique or a gap or something that I developed through my own critical thinking? Are there any existing arguments or perspectives in my topic which I missed? This is really important, and it's quite easy to miss out because often you'd read some literature on a particular topic and perhaps not seek out alternative perspectives. So for example, my, especially if it's a topic that is, you know, kind of close to you in a way, or if it's a topic you also have an opinion on. So the very good example is from my own work, which is on immigration. So everyone has an opinion on immigration policy or immigration. And, you know, it's a political opinion. But of course, you have to be critical of the sources. So it will be very easy to read the sources that kind of agree with my own political opinion on the topic and miss out some studies, which would be very good studies that perhaps show something that I wouldn't necessarily agree with. And there are many topics like this, so very many topics, especially if you do something on, I don't know, like some work on like education, looking at like some student experiences, and you had the experience as a student, so you kind of are set to see the topic in a particular way. And this makes it really easy to miss out sources that perhaps don't agree with that. And it's really, really crucial if you do have to do a kind of pro and cons kind of review or essay. Because if you have an essay and you have 20 paragraphs speaking only about, let's say, I am examining the pros and cons of qualitative interviewing in examining a particular topic. So is qualitative interviewing effective in speaking about this topic or not. And then I have, let's say, I don't know, 20 pages only speaking about how great qualitative interviewing is and how it leads to more nuanced data and how this nuanced data helps the analysis and so on. But then I miss out all the articles which can say why it's not such a great idea in some other circumstances. And finally, and importantly here, have I done more than surface reading? So we all start with surface reading. We all start with browsing the abstract on the library database. And then we do a bit more detailed reading when we actually maybe read the introduction or the conclusion of certain books, or maybe one particular chapter that really interests us. And then it's really the critical reading is when you go beyond that and actually engage with the text in more detail, not only skimming it. So have I done more than that? Have I actually engaged the text in a way that actually enables me to have critical ideas? Okay, and finally, the final step. So those steps are also in a logical order because you have to sort out your structure and argument before you sort out how you use the evidence and then look about how you use the evidence and the arguments to demonstrate critical thinking. And then finally, the style. So it is usually after you do write a bit of it. So thinking about, does the essay read well? You know, and be honest, read your essay and think, you know, can I actually follow this? A couple of you said about the second essay in the home exercise, I couldn't really read that. I couldn't really follow it. I felt I lost attention. That's what the marker will do as well. You know, we're all human. If it's something, if you read an article, a news article that you can't follow, you probably will just read the title and not read it anymore. The marker has to read the essay because they're marking it, but it makes it more difficult for them to follow. So yes, don't confuse the marker if you can edit your essay in a way that reads better. Can I leave enough time and can I ask things like, can I spot any grammar or spelling errors? Very important, what I use always is, can I say what I said in fewer words or in a clearer way? Are any of my paragraphs too long or too short? Again, in the home exercise, we looked at the essay two that had a paragraph. I still remember it, even if I read the essay a few days ago when I was doing my notes. I still remember that paragraph that is over a page long. So ask if any of your paragraphs are perhaps, you know, could be considered too long or too short. Then if you used any tables or figures, are those clearly labeled and formatted? This is really important if you have any visual data. Often I mark so many essays where the students include a table and it doesn't have a title or it doesn't have a reference if it's a table taken from another source, or if it's their own table, it doesn't have a, you know, figure title and an actual title. So like table one, participant demographics, is just there. So although just because you explain in the text and I could see that there's a table it refers to, it's still important in terms of style to have those, all the figures that you use clearly labeled. And then if I used any tables, so then the tables and figures, are there formatted correctly and labeled? And yes, what we already mentioned is, do I use the referencing style consistently? So that is the theory part of it, just to give you like an overview of like those like very core academic skills that will be assessed regardless of your level. So then what I will do now is come back to the chat and read the other contributions that you wrote there about the home exercise. And then I will ask everyone whether anyone changed their mind at all about the grade they initially gave to the essay, and then I will reveal what grades those essays actually got. Okay. So I'm reading the chat now. Yes, so Bing Shan says that when I scan the essay roughly, I think essay one gives subtitles indicating different parts which allow readers to follow easier. essay two involves many long paragraphs. Yes, very good point. Some long parts mostly cited one scholar that only show one perspective, which might need more referencing. So yes, it's exactly some of the key ideas we spoke about so far. Yes, avoid long paragraphs confusing the marker. Subtitles are actually good. I would say don't have too many. Don't have one subtitle only if you have one paragraph, unless it's the structure that was given to you. So in a few minutes, we'll look at another type of structure, another type of coursework. So if you have a set structure to follow, then use whatever the tutor or the lecturer sets out for you to follow. But if you kind of compile your own structure, in especially for a master's dissertation, subtitles are very good to use, but use them when it makes sense, when you actually introduce a very new idea or a new part, and don't overuse them. So it's a balance about that. So we can speak a bit more about that when we will do the structure seminar. Okay. Okay, so the question about conclusion. Okay, so Yansu has a question about critical thinking. So she says, I'm always confused about it. Does it mean analysis of articles and pointing out some limitations or good points? So there are many aspects to critical thinking. So let's say we're looking at the critical thinking in your literature review, because then it depends whether you do original research or not. So in the literature review, let's say I read an article about my topic, and I perhaps spotted that there's a limitation in their method, or perhaps I thought this article didn't really consider this perspective, or I can just have like an additional kind of idea. So just to give a concrete example, let's say that I read an article in my topic on immigration that looks at the experiences of Chinese and Polish students in the UK. And perhaps I read the article and I think, why did the author compare Chinese and Polish students in the UK? Is there any justification? Why not compare students from China and students from India instead, or students from Poland and students from Romania instead? Like, what is the justification of that comparison? And so critical thinking comes into play. So it means, kind of, when you read the article, don't assume that, you know, that article is perfect just because it was written by a very renowned academic. Think about, is there anything I could add? Is there anything that is lacking here? So yes, it's about kind of finding things to add to the literature, but it's also about finding gaps. So if, for example, you have a topic on which authors or scholars have written mainly from one perspective, and you find that on another type of perspective, there's very little literature, or there's something else missing, your critical thinking can also be emphasized by you being able to identify those gaps in knowledge. So you can say, there has been a lot of research done on the experience of Polish students in the UK, but I found nothing in this other context about the same population group. So it's about also finding gaps in literature. So it doesn't mean that you have to be critical of every single essay in very much detail, but it's also about kind of finding what is missing and how does your study or your essay build on that kind of what is missing. Okay, so we'll discuss more about this in week 8 when we speak about originality as well. So now, moving on to those essays and having read the other comments. So has anyone, just you can say that on the chat or with the voice, has anyone changed their mind? Do you think now that the essays are actually worse or better than you thought initially after having been through all the theory? Anyone wants to speak on this or write on the chat, or does everyone stick to the grades that you gave the essays? So I think from the grades that we got, so a few of you said between 50 and 60, and there was 170 for essay one. Yes, so sticking to the grades for Charlie. Okay. Yeah, I mean, if it, so. Okay. Yeah, so 60 for essay one, 50, 55 for essay two. And then we have a bit of a difference in opinion of, I think, Yeonsu, who graded a bit higher the first essay. So let's say that kind of range. What is clear from everyone who contributed to this exercise is that you thought broadly, and I thought initially as well, without reading it in detail, that the first essay was much better, and it does seem much better, and it's all about the writing style and how the arguments are presented. So if you don't look in very much detail into each criteria and try to have a marking grid and kind of really think through all the criteria, that really creates the first impression, even having, you know, a very clear abstract in a way, compared to here where we have like a more general paragraph that doesn't necessarily signpost the argument in the same way. So Yeonsu says 65 for essay one and 60 for essay two. Okay, thank you. So now, unless anyone else has to say anything more on the chat, I can say what the essays did actually get when they were marked by tutors at university, not by me, by other tutors. But I do agree with the marks. So the idea of the exercise was that most of you thought that the first essay is better and the second one is less good. But actually it's the other way around, but they're very, very close. So it's really interesting how kind of skimming an essay, or like, you know, kind of reading it without necessarily being a specialist on the topic, which, you know, I'm more closer to anthropology than perhaps if it was like a physics essay or something else, that could actually make the difference. And often that's very interesting exercise, because often students will have a mark, will get, I got a first for my undergraduate after all, but my very first essay, my undergraduate was a 55. And I thought that it's the end of the world, because in Romania, 5.5 in the mark means like it's a really, really low grade. So it was really like a shock to me. But then I learned through all those skills, and I did get a first in like my second and my third year, and actually managed to get the first overall. So it's not impossible. So the question really is that if you look into detail at all those criteria, the essays do sit within the 2-2 range. And that's mainly because of all the good comments we had from you about originality and about how you use the reference, and that the references were quite a few references, but there wasn't a very like critical engagement in terms of, you know, it was merely like descriptive and enumerating, but also in terms of the arguments, if you read them again at home and compare the introduction or the abstract with the conclusion, it's quite difficult to follow how the argument flows in those essays. And there's other things too, but we'll discuss more detail in the next weeks on the different skills. So now we have about 13, 14 minutes left. So what I thought to show you is we won't have time to do a full essay marking, but I thought to show you like 5 minutes of, you know, the first thoughts of essay marking, and then we can have. And then if you have any other questions, meanwhile, that you want me to answer at the very end of the session, please do put them on the chat. So then it could we could finish on time, and then I could answer very quick questions at the end. So now I will have to get the essay. I think I have to stop sharing and start sharing again. Sorry. Okay, so I'm going to stop sharing and I'm going to share again the essay screen. There's a lot of technical difficulty today. Okay.
Yeah, take your time with that, Alexandra. I think that it's very interesting because this other essay we're going to be looking at. Oh, is that ready now? Oh, perfect. Fantastic. Okay.
Yeah, it has like a bit of a glitch, the Zoom. I don't know why, like maybe it's something wrong with the internet. I don't know. So cool. I'll just go through like, you know, very, very shortly, like, you know, the first five minutes of what's going on in the marker's mind when they mark this essay. And the purpose of this exercise is to show quite a different essay and to show a different kind of marking grid as well. So this essay is a coursework. It's quite a short coursework, 1,500 words. And it says it's a very specific type of assessment in psychology, is a forensic risk assessment. And this type of exercise has a very clear structure that's, you know, known to you. So from the very beginning, you know what structure you have to follow for this type of exercise, so you don't have to come up with your own headline, your own subtitle, headlines or subsection titles. And it has also a very, very clear question that's set out from the beginning. So like, can this person be held responsible for the crime he's accused of? So it is like a question in forensic science. When I'm open an essay, especially a dissertation, what actually really helps a lot, especially if you have a longer dissertation, this is a short essay, but especially if you have something like 10,000 words or 15,000 words, is to have a very clear and nice looking table of contents. It may seem quite an obvious thing, but usually you will do the table of contents at the very end or leave it under the very end and forget. I even saw PhD theses that have like 400 pages without a table of contents. And that really confuses the marker or the examiner because you think, where do I even start? Like, it's very good to have this because this is not only makes it easier for the marker to navigate, but it also shows from the very beginning. So the marker will read your title and say, okay, I got the research question. It's very clear, very good. You know, can be answered. And then the table of contents actually makes a first impression. So if I see a very well structured one that follows either the type of structure that's required of that assessment or has your own structure in your dissertation, that makes me think from the very beginning that this student has a good structure. It already kind of sets my mind towards that way, having a nicely organized table of contents. Then again, this is like a type of assessment that kind of has a clear structure. So the sections tend to be quite short because the short coursework assessment. But again, it's an example of the different, it could be like an example of your methodology chapter in a way of like how you use different headings and subheadings. So you can speak about, you know, different materials you used, you know, source of information. Here, like they speak about, you know, some assessment methods that they use for this risk assessment. So in the same kind of structure you could use in a methodology chapter in your dissertation, speaking about what are my data sources, what assessment methods did I use, what kind of techniques did I use. So this is just to show you a kind of different type of structure. And then you go into like the evidence part of it, which is actually answering the question, which is the assessment itself. And this could be like kind of a results type of section where the student reports on the results that from those assessment methods used. And it's really clearly reported. And to be honest, I don't know if anyone spots any mistake as I scroll through. Like, I read this like a couple of times. I don't spot like any mistake in this essay in terms of like the style. And then what's very important, what I said in the other, what I said like a few minutes ago, it's the conclusion has to answer the question. So the very last bit of this conclusion, when I look at it, so the question to remind you is, so can this person be held responsible for the crime he's accused of? And are there any indications for pedophilic sexual interest which would reduce responsibility? So it has like a two-part question. The first question is, can he be held responsible of the crime? And then it's about the evidence of this. So when you look at the conclusion structure, it is summarizing the results of the different assessment tests, not repeating the arguments in detail, but summarizing, showing some critical thinking by highlighting some limitations, saying due to time constraints, various assessments would have been beneficial, were unable to be carried out. This leaves a side gap in what is known. So that's an example of the student kind of recognizing there are some limitations in the work and the results. But then, despite having the limitations, it's important to recognize the limitations, because this shows to me as a marker the student has critical thinking on her own work and her own analysis. But after that, the conclusion is still strong, saying, especially in the last bit, so this leads to the conclusion that he does not have a reduced responsibility for his actions. He would be expected to know the outcome of his behavior and therefore should face the justice system accordingly. So it's a clear conclusion saying, you know, can this person be accused of this? And the conclusion is basically saying yes, because based on the evidence that is presented in the essay. That's what I mean about, like, in the conclusion being critical about your limitations, but still having a strong argument that is summarized at the end and that is clear to me as a marker. And then there are other kind of bits and pieces that this particular assessment requires. Then the final thing I look at as a marker, I look at the reference list, and this reference list is, you know, formatted consistently in a good referencing style. And, you know, for this very short assessment and the type of assessment, again, which is a forensic risk assessment, that is roughly the, you know, a number of good references you could have for this particular very short assessment. Usually the marker, after I do this bit, and usually I would spend a bit more time, I won't spend only 5 minutes, usually about maybe 20, 30 minutes you have allocated to mark a certain essay. The marker will just write overall comments. So we'll just say something like, excellent structure and clear argument or something like that. And then they will also say some suggestions of improvement. And then what I wanted to show you in this exercise is a bit of a different marking grid. So they will still have, this is the marking grid from this particular essay. So they will still have knowledge and understanding, which are kind of separate criteria here. I kind of lump them into the same category because they kind of speak to the same academic skills. Then communication and presentation that are kind of separate, citation and referencing. And there's, because it's a technical assessment, there's also what I spoke about before. We speak about essential criteria, which are all the criteria I spoke about today and in the slides. And then often specific assessments like in medical sciences or in certain psychology subdisciplines, they will have some technical and practical competences, which is in this essay mainly using those assessment methods and how the student used it. So in this essay, we didn't have time to read it in detail. I'm happy to send it like part of maybe a class exercise for you to read it in detail and see whether you agree with the marker's assessment. But this essay was marked basically like this throughout, and the final mark was 78 for this essay. So that's just to show you like a different type and how much, you know, how much it matters that the question is clear and it's answerable at the beginning, that your conclusion does repeat the argument and offers an answer to the question, and that the structure is very evident from the start. And those are not the only things that makes the 78, but those are like the kind of first 5 minutes of the marker having an impression about your work. So now it is, just a few minutes left for questions and answers. So I will stop the share of the document and I will look at the chat again and answer to any questions you may have. So I'm trying to see the chat again. Okay, so we answered the critical thinking question. Okay. I'm just scrolling through the chat because there's quite a bit of chat. Yeah, Charlie, wow, 78. Yes, 78 is possible to achieve. So that's why this course, hopefully, you'll you know, develop each week on a on a different skill that, you know, all together, all the 10 weeks together will be able to boost your grades and everyone else's. Yeah, I'm surprised that a 1,500 word essay can be this well structured. I think that's why tutors could actually be helpful, because in some modules you have a structure is already given to you. I've done a module in my undergraduate, which was on medical sociology, and we had to do a very particular type of assessment where the structure was just given to us. Just this is what you have, those sections, and you just kind of fill those in. But in a lot of other degrees, you are left with your own structure, and that's why it's important to kind of check your structure with your tutor before. And of course, we can, if you go to the stage of the writing that you have a structure in the seminar about structure, we could look at examples from your own work and be able to improve your own structure on your topic. Okay. So, I mean, I'm conscious the time is 4 p.m. now, so it's been an hour and a half. I mean, if anyone else has any other questions, I am happy to still stay for a few minutes and answer them. But it seems that I covered everything from the chat, because I did cover some during the slides as well. So just to say briefly about you'll have some notes that I will email to you that kind of summarize the key points in the slides and also include that four-step checklist for your essay and dissertation. And I have to start the screen share again for this. So just to end on this, if no one else has questions, any more questions, so that will be next week's topic. So the class exercise, the home exercise was sent a bit in a way last minute this week because we just started this course. But from now on, I will send the home exercises every Monday. So you have plenty of time before Thursday to look at them. I'll aim to send them on Monday morning, so you have even more time than if I send them on Monday evening. So do make sure to check your inbox. It'll be an email from me with the class exercise and with any kind of reading. I won't do, like, the idea is to work on actual essays that are submitted by students at different universities. So the readings will mainly be like other students' essays, like usually one, maximum two a week, and usually shorter essays. But the next week will actually be a note-taking exercise. So the next week I will select an engaging reading that you will actually enjoy to read regardless of your topic. And you'll just prepare some notes. So the question will be something like, how do you take notes on this particular reading? And then in the class we'll share the different notes that we have. So all of us can use like screen share if we want, and share different notes we took on the same reading. And then we can go through different models of note-taking that could actually help you develop critical thinking and on the readings, but also keep your reading notes organized. So that will be next week. It will be like quite a practical session. So I will send the exercise on Monday so everyone has time to do it, because if everyone does this short exercise, we can share a lot more and we can like learn more from each other as well in terms of how to effectively note-take. So I'm just checking the chat again. So Victor already replied, you'll be able to get the slides and the audio.
Yeah, exactly. So like that, basically, essentially just kind of using the audio and then having the slides as well to go through. So then you can essentially go through it in a more kind of controlled way, meaning you can go through the slides at the pace you want and pause the audio where you want. So we'll be sending that out. We actually have another student we had, and she messaged me saying that she got a bit of a mistake with the time zone. So we're going to be sending her the audio as well, but she'll be joining us for next week. But yeah, that's fantastic. So the final things to say is that do please send us feedback, actually. So feel free to send us some feedback via email to Alexandra. Of how you felt about this first session. And we really want to make it so that you can actually have this course be tailored in a way that you feel is something that you like. So if you think, oh, I want more of this, I want more of that, then do please let us know. And we'd be really happy to do that. The second thing is that I wanted to say that this is an idea that came to me, and so you're welcome all to try to follow this if you want. But I know that some people are interested in looking sometimes at past essays they've submitted and trying to kind of, you know, have the essay broken down. So one option you do have, and this is totally up to you, you can actually send us the essay, and then we can go over this essay in the class. So obviously it's an essay submitted already. It wouldn't be shared with anyone. It would be just for the class purposes. But if you are interested to kind of, you know, number one, have feedback on your own essay in the classroom and kind of be able to discuss it while also kind of benefiting everybody because they get to see how that essay is went through in terms of the feedback, then that's an option as well. Apart from that, that is all for today then, Alexandra, right? And then we'll be having the next session, same time, 2 p.m. Thursday next week. The Zoom link, we will make sure there is no problem this time. It will go over it properly. And again, Alexandra, you said that we'll be sending out the material for next week on Monday. Is that right?
Yeah, so I'll send the class exercise on Monday to everyone, and I'll double check again the Zoom link and send you the next meeting links. And yeah, just thank you everyone for your contributions today. It was great to have so many different ideas and a bit of a discussion. And yeah, as Victor said, please do send to me like any kind of feedback you may have, or to Victor directly, because I could actually adapt some of the examples and not speak about my own subject all the time, or like only about this, a few subjects. So I could actually incorporate some examples that actually interest some of you more than, so please do send me any kind of additions or any kind of examples that you may want to use.
Perfect. And we'll be sending out the slides and the audio tonight. So do please look forward to that then. Great. Well, thank you so much then, everyone. It was a really fantastic session. And thank you for Karina also joining us, who will be teaching us in a few sessions. So that's very nice. And a big thank you to Alexandra, as well as everybody that was able to join us today. And